Hi, I'm Jordan Raskopoulos, and this is about a midlife crisis and a sunken treasure. Today we're out at sea, about 50 nautical miles off the east coast of Victoria. So basically, the middle of nowhere. The deep water is calm and a glorious blue. There's nothing out here apart from a single fishing trawler.
We were fishing out of the lake's entrance. It was late morning, sun was high in the sky. Fishing was pretty good, we were getting a few flathead.
This is Jack, a local fisherman, and on this particular day, he and his mate pulled in something a little unusual.
We started winching 2 miles of rope, and one of the ropes was hanging down, and I couldn't see because I was standing up at the winch control. So I asked me deckhand Russ, I said, what do we got? He yelled out, oh, a postie bike. I just didn't believe him. I had to walk down the back of the boat and have a look for myself.
A postie bike. You know, like a little red motorbike that male men and male women rip around the suburbs on.
I had a phone call from my sister-in-law and she said, oh, go down and buy the Weekly Times. So I went down and here's this little article about fishermen pulling up a postie bike in their fishing net off Lake's entrance. And I've gone, oh, it couldn't be. No, no way.
This is Marilyn Bullock. She lives in Wodonga, not far from her 2 grown-up kids, Campbell and Lauren.
I got the kids and I said, have a look at this, will you? And so my son went online to this fishing column thing and there was a photo of it. And I've gone, oh, my God, that is the postie bike.
And then, yeah, we took it back in and everyone was pretty keen to come down and have a look. A few stories started circulating. I suppose there's a bit of mystery around it.
Jack and his mates chucked the bike in the back of the ute and took it home. They hung it up above the bar in the garage.
Probably a little bit like catch of the year. And then my son spoke to the fisherman. He said, look, I think it's my dad's postie bike. And I'll tell you the story.
Marilyn's husband, Alan. He always had been a bit of an adventure man. A real larrikin. Before his big ocean sailing trip, there were years of skiing full pelt down mountains and death-defying speedboating up rivers.
We would go to all of the river races, and Alan would be skiing along at 80 mile an hour, or I don't know what speeds they were doing, but it was fast. They were the sorts of things that he could do because he was such a natural or whatever he did.
But his main love? Motorbikes. The old postie bike the blokes on the boat had fished out at the ocean had been on the back of Alan's yacht. He was going to use it to get around on dry land as he stopped off on his way up the coast.
There's a photo of Alan and he's at the back of the yacht. The sun is behind him and he's waving goodbye. And it's the most hauntingly beautiful photo. It was just like this sailing off into the mist. He had said his last hurrah, waved goodbye, and away he went. It was almost like they broke the mould when they made Alan. He was a bit of an enigma.
Marilyn and Alan first met back in the 70s. He was stationed with the army near Albury Wodonga.
I met Alan at the opening of a local club called the Barella Club. I was there with my parents and this gorgeous looking blonde, buffed up fellow was being a real smarty. So he came over and asked me to dance. I thought, yep, yep, righto, up we get. And it was almost like it was all about him. He was such a show-off. And so basically I just turned around and walked back to my seat. And that shocked him a little bit, I think. I don't think he'd had anybody ever do that to him before. And so he swaggers over to the table and he says, come on, let's finish the dance. So we got up and kept dancing and I thought to myself at the time, oh, you're a bit suave, you're a bit up yourself. But, you know, when you see a guy in uniform, it's pretty attractive. And so that sort of began a bit of a whirlwind romance, I suppose, and we were married in 1974 and that was the beginning of our life together. In the early days, we had a good marriage. You know how sometimes you hear about marriages that you know what the other partner's thinking and vice versa? That was a little bit how we operated as well. We were mates, but we were fiery also. You didn't really know what to expect next half the time. You know, an example would be going diving. I used to love going diving. Because you know what? It was peaceful. You could get under the water and you couldn't hear him. Because he's always chattering about something. It was, most of it was bullshit. So you'd get under the water and it was just lovely, you know, and you'd be holding hands and he'd be showing you things and you'd be doing all sorts of stuff. And then he found a whistle that he could take down under the water. And as soon as that whistle went off, we've gone, oh my God, you can't shut him up. Alan went to work in Papua New Guinea for 12 months and I chose to stay home in Port Macquarie and look after our son, and my daughter was at uni in Newcastle. It was a tough time for Alan in New Guinea. Firstly, he was robbed by the rascals that they call them. And then another incident was when a very unhappy client came into his office. It was with a guy holding a machete and sliced it through the computer on the desk. So even though he thought he was pretty tough, I think that had a huge effect on him. And I often said that it was like he'd been to Vietnam and he'd come back to Australia with a bit of post-traumatic stress, because he came back a really angry person. And something had diminished between he and I. You know, the spark had gone. His spark had gone. We'd been together for 30 years, but we were separated for the last 6 years. But probably wouldn't be a day go by that we didn't ring each other or meet somewhere, but we were certainly not in a relationship. But there was always a closeness. Alan decided, I suppose, that he needed an adventure, probably a bit of spark in his life. So he bought a yacht and he made a plan. And the plan was to sail to Southwest Rocks and surprise his father for his birthday. That boat had belonged to another old sailor. It was a 42-foot steel ketch and it had been sunk. Something to do with the electrode thingos, whatever, in it that weren't working. So he thought, well, I can fix this. I can do everything. I'm a good welder. I can do everything. So he painstakingly welded all of the holes where it had been sunk and had all the electrics done. And it probably still wasn't finished. The biggest thing that he should have done was fix the steering, because I do know for a fact that, you know how yachts have got the great big wheel at the back? He had to stand on it for it to move. So the money that he eventually spent on that boat, he could have gone and bought one that was easier to handle. We were all very nervous about him going. He hadn't done a lot of ocean sailing, and that part of the coast, that's the Bass Strait. And I mean, that's where a lot of the yachties get into trouble. It's a vulnerable piece of water. It's a dangerous piece of water. We tried to talk him out of it at that point, but once again, he was on a mission and nobody could tell him that he couldn't do it. There was a couple of other boats leaving at the same time, and so he followed them, but they were a lot faster. So they looked behind and they saw him, then they'd lost sight of him. The last person that spoke to him was on the Saturday or the Sunday at about midday. He said, I'm just going to go downstairs and get some painkillers, because his knee was hurting. He had a sore knee. And that was probably the last call. After that, his phone just went to message bank. A few days later, there was a knock at the door and it was a police officer. And I knew that something was wrong. He said, does Alan Bullock live here? I said, yes, this is his address, but currently he's on a sailing journey. And he said, what's the name of his yacht? And I said, Sea Eagle. And he said, there has been a yacht found, washed up. And he said, I need to go away and confirm. But he said, just prepare yourself. It was an intense time waiting, wondering if he was going to be found dead or alive. And soon they started the search. So they had police planes, helicopters, ambulance. They had a really, really big search and rescue boat, the police boat from Painesville. And when I saw photos that they showed us later, that boat was two, three-storey big catamaran, and it looked like a little fishing boat. That's how big the seas were and how big the rocks were. So on the last morning, they'd made a plan that they would try to winch some officers down onto the boat from a helicopter. But they could only get onto the boat for seconds at a time. So then they did another lowering of another officer, and a hunk of wood went flying past him out the back of the boat over to the rock ponds. And that's exactly where they found Alan. So he'd been washed out or overboard and into a big rock pond. But he had already been deceased by then. Just hit me like an absolute bomb. One part of you is saying, well, you idiot, you know. Everybody had a gut feeling that this was going to happen. You know, why did you do this? You know, why didn't you wait? But on the other hand, well, good on you. You've had a go. You know, you've actually followed through with what you said you were going to do. Nobody will know what went wrong. According to the police and the coroner, it would have been very quick. And I don't believe... Look, he would have been frightened, but I don't think that he would have suffered much, to tell you the truth. And I think that that's something that is good for us to know. Campbell and I and Lauren went down to the funeral home and we sat with him for a little while and had our few tears and told him he was a silly bugger and, you know. And then an almighty bang, like a gun going off. Well, we've hit the deck. There's glass going everywhere and it was a light that exploded and was on fire. And so Lauren's just looked up and she says, righto, Dad, yeah, righto, we get the message, you know. You just want to let us know that you're still around. And we're sitting there and, you know, feeling a little bit sad. And the next thing my son Campbell says, what is that smell? And I've gone, what? And Lauren's gone, oh, my God, it's Dad. And it was. And we're panicking then because I stupidly got a cedar coffin because cedar is porous. It's beautiful, but not when you got something stinking in there. And we've gone, what the hell are we going to do? We're in a panic. Thank God it was late night shopping. So I've got as many vanilla candles as I could. And they've gone down to the supermarket and got sprays. And they said, look, we're going to put him back in the freezer. And then just before everybody comes in, we'll whip him out of the freezer and bring him in. I mean, isn't that awful? But that was funny. And then on the day of the funeral, my son wanted to take the Ducati bike down and lead the funeral car out. And he started it up outside and it was just this rumble. And I remember Alan on that bike, you could hear him coming a mile away, but this rumble. And of course Campbell just, you know, throttled the motor on it. And so he rode out in front of the hearse and gave a couple of more revs of it, and then we heard Campbell absolutely flog it down the road, and I thought, oh, how great is that? That is exactly what Alan would have done. He would have popped it up on the wheel and, you know, and I was hoping that Campbell wouldn't fall off because he had his good suit and everything on, but no, he came back and everybody was clapping and laughing, and it was so him, and the place was packed. He would have thought it was terrific. He would have been in his glory. And I've never been to a funeral that was like that. So it's a story and a half, isn't it? It all originated from finding the postie bike. And isn't that amazing, in that huge ocean out there, what the hell would be the chances of pulling up his bike? That is Alan all over. Like, what the hell are you trying to say, mate? That has to be some sort of a message. And so we were laughing. We're saying, oh, Big Al's sending us the mail. You know, he's sending us the mail on the postie bike. And I don't think he would have one regret that he took that journey. It just happened to have a different ending to the one that he expected. I think that we just tend to go on, and it's interesting because I go out into the back garden, have a glass of wine, and I think, geez, you did a good job of this garden, mate. You know, this is really, really something nice that you've done and that you've left behind. And but then when you marry it up and you think, God, we had some arguments out here. I wanted that tree there. I wanted that something or other there. You know? I guess it's, you know, how married life goes a little bit, doesn't it? But I think that you just remember some of what he's left behind. He's there still.
This episode of This Is About was produced by Jesse Cox, Belinda Lopez, Jessica Beneth, Kate Montague and Tim Roxburgh. Sound by Simon Branthwaite. If you're new to the podcast, make sure you check out some of our previous episodes. We have a whole bunch of extraordinary stories from all sorts of people. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes and tell everyone to listen. I'm Jordan Raskopoulos.